between families is, it's going to be a challenge in the coming days and weeks.
Yes, it is. It is. But, you know, like I said, these conversations and actually you doing what you're doing and telling the story, right? And people hearing about this, hopefully, even if it just sparks someone else to say, you know what? I agree with that. Let's do something about that. Yeah. It means so much.
You've been listening to the diverse voices of Altadena and North Pasadena in Southern California, who've come together to offer mutual aid to their neighbors, friends, and family members in the wake of the devastating Eaton Fire, which has claimed at least 16 lives and destroyed thousands of homes. Broadcasting from a home studio just blocks away from where the fires raged, I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, senior editor at Yes Media and host of Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Our audio podcast is on iTunes and Spotify.
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. Radioland. I am Eldridge Cleaver, the former Minister of Information of the Black Panther Party. You are listening to KBOO Portland. This is listener-sponsored, non-commercial community radio. I want you to listen to and support KBOO because Portland needs it, you need it, and the world needs it. Ubalagani! Boing, boing.
It seems like recently the struggle to take action on climate change has gotten more complicated. And there are a lot of solutions that are presented to us that at first glance look kind of good because they have the words green or renewable in them. But then when you dig into them more deeply, it turns out that not only are they a waste of precious time, but they actually are climate solutions that are worse for the climate. It's like chasing chimeras, a beast from Greek mythology, which sounds fabulous, but ends up to be a fanciful illusion.
Chasing Chimeras, The Lure of Deceptive Climate Solutions, a new documentary by veteran producer Barbara Bernstein, premieres on Locus Focus, Monday, January 27th at 10 a.m. Tune into Locus Focus on KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM Portland, 104.3 FM Corvallis, or 91.9 FM Hood River, or anywhere in the world streaming online at kboo.fm. That's Chasing Chimeras, The Lure of Deceptive Climate Solutions on Locus Focus, Monday, January 27th at 10 a.m.
Does your employer have a matching gifts program? Many companies offer dollar-for-dollar matching charitable contributions for donations you make to KBOO. The impact of your gift may be doubled or possibly tripled. Participating companies also match gifts made by retirees and/or spouses. Matching gifts are a great way for you to maximize your membership dollars. Check with your company's human resources or accounting departments to find out if your employer matches charitable contributions, then request a matching gift form. For more information on companies making matching gifts, go to kboo.fm/employer matching.
JVD Hard Knock Radio hanging out with you this afternoon. We have two freedom fighters, people who stand 10 toes down and are willing to fight the good fight for our collective and individual liberation. We're talking about my brother from another mother, Kalonji Changa, in the building. We also got Queen Janine in the building, human rights activist. Also, if you know the name, she's former producer up here in the Bay Area, but now both of them are in Atlanta. We're having you all on because you're starting to do a film series. And Janine, maybe you could give us a brief breakdown of some of this. And then I want to talk a little bit more about it. But what's happening with this Soul Cinema thing that you all are doing?
Well, Soul Cinema Sundays is the name of the series. And it actually comes out of an idea that happened in the Bay Area. Me and some friends years ago used to gather at each other's houses because we weren't, just like in the early 2010s, we weren't really happy with the depiction of Black people in mainstream films. So we would gather at each other's houses in the Bay and watch underground movies like Chameleon Street and The Spook Who Sat by the Door and obscure movies like Love, Sex, and Eating the Bones. Like Hill Harper is in that film. That's a really good film, but a lot of people don't know these titles. So Soul Cinema Sundays is an extension of that, showing Black underground films, but the added component with this series is having an organization come and speak about the film, what the film's theme is. So example, we're playing The Last Black Man in San Francisco for the first one, January 19th, and having the Housing Justice League come and talk about their work around gentrification. So every film will have an activist component to it, where people can be educated about what organizations are working around that issue and how they can get involved, specifically how they can get involved.
Well, that sounds like that's next level, you know, to definitely complement the art with some real activity.
Yes.
And it's crazy as you're sitting there talking and you're saying that you have some of these obscure films. We're living at a time where what we thought was obscure and far-fetched actually has a lot of relevance today, you know, just the way the political winds are blowing and things that we thought were long gone in terms of issues are right in front of us, whether we're talking about crazy fires like we've seen in L.A. and how many movies have we seen in L.A. where the city's burnt down and you're going, yeah, that's a great movie. And now you're sitting there looking at that movie and really talking about it. Because you're seeing it happening in real life, or looking at Octavia Butler's stories, you know, even though a lot of them haven't been made into movies, but if you're just talking about, you know, art imitating life and life imitating art, we're at that moment. And so, you know, Spook Who Sat by the Door, all kind of things like that. And of course, in this one, you're talking about Last Man in San Francisco, right? Last Black Man in San Francisco. That's the first film. Mm-hmm. And it's as relevant as it is today as it was back then. And even if you're in Atlanta, it's relevant.
Most definitely, sadly. I mean, you know, and that's major metropolitan cities across the nation are seeing these stories on repeat. So, you know, it's The Last Black Man in San Francisco, but it could be easily called The Last Black Man in New Orleans. Or, yeah, pick a city. You know,
Last Black Man in Oakland, where we're at, Last Black Man even in Atlanta.
Atlanta's got a strong base. It depends. I mean, if you talk to the natives here and when they talk about what's happening with gentrification, I mean, gentrification is partly how I even ended up in Atlanta. You know, Oakland is not the city that I love Oakland. I'm not going to talk trash about Oakland, but it's not the city that I grew up in terms of demographics, in terms of feel, in terms of soul. And, partially was looking for that that richness that Oakland used to have, that gentrification gutted the city. And
yeah. Well,
so that's partly.
We were 70% Black, and now it's down to 22.
Yeah.
So that's in within a 20-year period. And it's right. Not because people hated the city, and it's not because it was quote unquote too much crime. We're talking about $5,000 rents. Kalonji, how's your involvement with this and the work that you're doing? How are you all linking up to do the Soul Cinema?
Right. Yeah. First of all, you know, definitely appreciate coming on. Hard Knock Radio is always one of my favorite shows. I hate to give Davey D credit, but I'm going to do that today on this occasion, on this snowy Georgia occasion, right? But I think that one of the things that my involvement, for so to speak, was in reaching out and saying, you know, we're doing this Soul Cinema piece, and we would like to get someone on the ground involved. And my involvement, you know, always about political education. Of course, like I said, we was joking a little earlier, Davey, but we've been knowing each other for decades. And one of my main things is creative resistance, because I feel like it is absolutely necessary. It's imperative for us to use what we call the cherry cough drop theory, make it taste so good that folks forget it's medicine. And we know, to your point about gentrification and imperialism, colonialism, etc., to quote one of the Bay Area legends all around the world, same song, you know. So, you know, for Janine to come with this type of idea and to have it held monthly in an actual theater, I thought it was genius. I thought it was an opportunity to politicize folks on another level, not just, you know, because, you know, as organizers, oftentimes we're preaching to the choir, but unfortunately, most of the time, the choir doesn't know the, you know, they don't know the sermon anyway. They hardly know the tunes. But, you know, so our involvement is to organize, to utilize whatever tool that we can to move us closer towards some form of, if I dare say, revolution. We know that it is timely because, of course, we have, you know, the whole Trump era, this whole remix. People need some type of hope. People need to see themselves in it as victors, not as victims.
That's right.
So part of this whole Soul Cinema piece and our involvement as far as the FTP movement and the Black Power media is to heighten the contradictions and to, you know, make it as plain as possible.
And Kalonji, during the talk, so we'll be hosting the Housing Justice League, and Kalonji will be in conversation with Monica Johnson, I believe, of the Housing Justice League. They will be in conversation before the movie starts, and Kalonji will be hosting those conversations. And so that's also another piece that he's offering in the series as well.
So, one of the things that you said, in either one of you, Janine or Kalonji, can jump in, was having hope. And you talk about a remix with this new administration. And I think while they play the role of a buffoon and seem to be sowing a lot of seeds of chaos and seem unorganized and all that, I don't see them as being very dumb. I see them as being very deliberate and very calculating, and in people who've studied. And one of the things that I think has been studied is to understand that our cultural capital is something that needs to be collapsed and compromised, and has been a form of resistance and a form of hope for many. And so you see all these efforts to stop these sorts of things. Let's ban the books. Let's get at Hollywood and say no more movies talking about Black folks and brown folks and all this. That, you know, we're going to contaminate the word woke. We're going to call any sort of Black presence a DEI presence, and we're going to try and shut it down. And so, you know, you find this attempt to attack us culturally and either denigrate us or dismiss it or just make it disallowed. How important does this become when you're gathering people around a social and artistic artifact, so to speak, and really putting a politic to it? That seems to be flying right in the face of the attempts to diminish what we're doing and reduce it. Any comments or thoughts on that?
I think that, you know, the importance, the thing about, you know, and to your point, they're far from dumb. You know what I'm saying? It's not, you know, in fact, they play dumb. I think what the state uses is what Ali used with George Foreman, the rope-a-dope style. They lean against the ropes and make you think that you're actually swinging with all your might and make you think that you're actually effective because you're just swinging, but in fact, you're spitting in the wind. We know that the state has traditionally used artists and athletes as tools of repression, whether it's Louis Armstrong with the Patrice Lumumba situation, whether it was Jesse Owens in Germany, you know, during the Olympics, if it was, you know, right now, you have, how many artists can we name? I mean, a plethora of artists from Flava Flav to Bono supporting Zionist Israel. And they can play dumb, you understand what I'm saying? Or you can jump up and down and do it for the sake of the money and act like you don't know the politics. But if you don't know, then you should, because these are political, quote unquote, political artists. You understand what I'm saying? And the thing is, unfortunately, there's a lot of liberalism. You understand what I'm saying? So, you know, you don't want to name certain names because, you know, we're cool or we're friends and this cat's chummy and all that type of stuff. But the fact is, as my grandmother used to say, right ain't going wrong nobody. You understand what I'm saying? You know when you're out of order. You know that if you're doing certain things, if you are meeting with the State Department, and you are performing and co-signing wars and aggression, so on and so forth, you're out of order because you know what the state does. You can't, you know, we all have contradictions. Let's not get it twisted. You know, they say that contradiction between the people and the people can be rectified. It can be reconcilable. But contradictions between the state and the people are irreconcilable, because the state, their job is about destruction. The beautiful thing that I think Janina is doing with these films, it is a hand-picked situation. So even with the Last Man in San Francisco, I know I'm messing the title up.
The Last Black Man in San Francisco.
Even better. Look at that. See, my tongue got the most important part, the black man. But even when we're talking about gentrification, that's genocide. It's cultural genocide. And there's no nice terms for it. It's not just a relocation process. You are destroying legacies. You are destroying history. The original genocide here in the United States was that of the natives.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying? And we forget that. So you have folks like Leonard Peltier, who's done 50 years on February 6th in captivity and 80 years old because of his fight for the rights of Native people. You understand what I'm saying? So all of this is connected. So this is the efforts that we're going to make. We're going to point out the contradictions and let it sit, you know, and pop it, opposed to allowing it to fester and folks walk around playing dumb like, okay, I didn't know I wasn't supposed to perform in Zionist Israel. I didn't know that the Palestinians were getting slaughtered. I mean, it's all over the place.
Well, it's interesting when you said Leonard Peltier, and you think about what he was doing, him and his people were doing to defend their land, and how they were deemed terrorists, and 50 years later they're still in jail.
Right.
And you compare that with the platitudes and upliftment and heroism that's been showered on the January 6th folks who rushed the Capitol and were threatening to hang people and actually, you know, beating on cops, I think injured 150 of them, and two wind up dying, and the whole nine, they're about to be pardoned.
Right.
You know, before the month is out. And so you talk about contradictions, but also realizing again that folks ain't dumb, you know, whether it's this administration that will go out and not pardon him and say, we understand you were fighting against oppression and, you know, enough's enough, or whether it's the incoming one that's sitting there going, yeah, you fought the state, and you're going to do another 50 years, and these people who were fighting the state, they were fighting on our behalf, so let's let them out, is something that we should always kind of keep in mind, those type of contradictions, which is why you always want to resist and why you want to fight the good fight to try and right some of these wrongs. It's just something that came to mind. I don't know if it was a sidetrack, but...
You know, David, to your point, yes, we're dealing with, this is a savage situation. It's crazy that you brought up January 6th, and here it is, like I said, no one's talking about February 6th. You know what I'm saying? The 50 years in captivity. You know what I mean? Yeah. So that's where we have to shift our focus. We have to say, okay, we can't just accept the state's narrative. We can't just accept that Trump is being inaugurated on the day that is supposed to be King's national holiday for his birthday. You understand what I'm saying? The contradictions are just off the chart. And we have grown to accept and make that a part of our historic timeline, our culture, et cetera. And I think that, again, that's why this film series. Now, some people might be like, well, you know, well, how is that film going to help? It's conversation. You know what I'm saying? It's breaking down how we should move within this society and culture.
And I just want to just jump in really quickly. Whenever I talk about the series, I also want to just bring the term love up, because we don't talk about that much in this culture. And the reason why is because this is a love offering that I also want to mention. And I feel like, and this is not to be fear-mongering or anything around Trump, I would say that my thoughts when around the time when the elections happens was that we're going to have to figure out what it means to be community, and we're going to have to figure out how to come together, and we're going to have to figure out how to love one another and be creative in how we come together. And in the spirit of, I mean, what's the energy behind how and why we're coming together? And I think that that's important. But my intentions behind the event is community, and we're gonna have to figure out how to connect with one another, how to have conversations that need to be had, and how to come together in love and unity. So I just want to put that out there too.
Well, I think whenever you do community, ideally it should be love. But even when you go back, Janine, and look at the emphasis for this Soul Cinema when you were doing it in the Bay Area, was because there was something lacking.
Yes.
there needed to be a sense of community. There was not enough love being given to projects that didn't meet maybe Hollywood's criteria or, you know, other powers' criteria, so wasn't promoted, it was undermined, et cetera, et cetera. And so you created a space where those things could be rediscovered and uplifted and conversated on. And here we are years later. The political climate has actually gotten worse, because now you're looking at a scenario where books are being banned. You're looking at a scenario where Hollywood has definitely shifted, as you just look at all the moguls who have gone down and said, yeah, we're not going to do any more diversity. No, we're not going to, you know, cater to these people. We're in fact against these people. We hate these people, you know, whatever it takes to be in favor of the incoming administration, which means that many of these things will be locked up in the vault somewhere. Any sort of projects, you know, that would have us depicted in a good light is going to be shelved. And having a space where you kind of dig deep into those vaults and reintroduce a new generation to some of those works, I think, take on heightened importance. You know, what you're doing is going alongside the folks at a meeting at churches to talk about Black history because it's being banned. And it's going alongside of the folks in LA that are meeting because now their entire schools and libraries have burnt. You know, so what does it mean when they start going back, not to school, but to the neighborhood churches and boys clubs, as I just getting off the phones with people in those areas who lost everything? They're talking about what you're talking about. In fact, literally just last night, folks were saying, we now have to redefine what it means to love each other and what does community mean? In this case, it's the result of a natural disaster that is brought about because of climate change and maybe some political undoings. But at the same time, it's as Kalonji was saying, all around the world, same song, but maybe also all around the world, people coming to the same conclusion and hopefully solution. So you are on time and ahead of your time, and here we are at a moment when this is taking on, I think, heightened importance.
Yeah. I agree, man. And I want to definitely say, you know, the importance of, you know, the work that you're doing, Davey, the importance of Hard Knock Radio and other platforms around the world. This politicizing and keeping people in tune and in touch, and not having a narrow focus, because you have so many folks who are on many platforms, you know, they're self-destructive when it comes to our culture. You know what I'm saying? They serve as parasites. They, you know, it's always criticisms of what Black folks are doing, what's wrong with us, so on and so forth. We get all that. That's great. We get enough of that. But how do we come to that very key word that you spoke of, solutions? What are the solutions? Right. You know what I'm saying? And I know that Janine brought up the word love. And as Che Guevara, and we paraphrase, Che Guevara is saying that revolution is an act of love, right? For us, you know, it is a sad day on this planet when you have to go to war for peace. When you literally have to fight for love, not fight to be in a relationship, but just fight for the sake of humanity. You know what I'm saying? You have to, you know, as they said back in the day, put your dukes up, you know, just for peace. You know what I mean? You gotta defeat the bully. And by all means, not just by any means, but by all means, because we are in stuck in a time capsule.
Right.
And being stuck in this time capsule, it's not the same. Let me rephrase that. It's the same, but different. You understand what I'm saying? It's the same formula, but they're utilizing different tools. So we know that media has been a tool to love destruction and tool for our destruction. So again, you know, salute to you for even saying, you know what, let's have these folks on here to talk about what some may just say, okay, well, that's just an event. No, there is no just an event. So definitely salute to you and salute to Janine for making sure that we keep on the right side of the barrel.
You know, before I let you go, Janine, even though this is in Atlanta, we're on the air in Atlanta, how can people be involved? And also, what are some of the other movies you all have planned coming up?
You can get involved. You can follow Orange Amber Productions on Instagram, orangeamberproductions.co. Also, stay in tune there as well. So our first showing is January 19th, The Last Black Man in San Francisco, 4 p.m. at the Plaza Theater. The next one is February 9th, and that is Bamboozled. And then in March, we're working on a film for International Women's Day. So stay tuned for that.
Okay. Well, I mean, you're coming out the box swinging with two good movies. I mean, you can do entire semesters on Last Black Man, and you can do an entire semester on Bamboozled. So, you know, that's enough right there.
Well, check it, Davey. You know, shamelessly, I have to admit that I haven't seen Last Black Man in San Francisco. So I'll be hosting and checking the film out at the same time. I'm just going to wait till the film comes out because I want to be double excited. So I'm looking forward to the film for multiple reasons.
Yeah, well, most definitely. We'll have to have you back, Kalonji, because I know you and Daruba have a book coming out. So we'll do a whole full show on focusing on that. And I'm glad you're confessing. So as we close out, let people know that you can get the information on hardknockradio.org. But since you're confessing, you know, about not seeing Last Black Man in San Francisco, you can also let people know you never seen The Wire and you don't know how to play spades and that you put raisins in your potato salad. I mean, go ahead, brother. Let's let it all out.
First of all, I have seen The Wire. Secondly, I'm the top spades player in North America. Let's just say that. don't let us put together a East Coast, West Coast spades tournament where we can have Davey D, Team Davey D versus Team Kalonji. Let me know Hard Knock Radio versus Black Power Media. We can make that happen. So don't get it twisted, Davey D.
Well, I don't, at this time when we have so much stress and strife, I don't believe we should be playing cards, my brother. You know, I'm keeping my eyes focused on lifting the people up. I don't have time for card games.
Davey D, I'll just let you count your raisins as your potato salad.
There's nothing wrong with raisins in the potato salad, brother. You know, raisins are another source of protein.
San Francisco treat.
Well, look, I'm going to let you all go. Janine, again, thank you for joining us. Tell people again where they can go for the movie in Atlanta.
Well, the tickets are available. Well, you can get information about tickets at the Plaza Atlanta, the Plaza Theater in Atlanta. And also you can follow Orange Amber Productions on Instagram and orangeamberproductions.co for more information.
There you have it. Janine Etta, thank you. Queen Janine, Kalonji Changa, thank you. And we'll have you back to talk about this book that you all did, which I think is tremendously important. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
Hard Knock Radio. We're rocking with Picasso.
What?
And Maya.
Who?
And my last name is Susana. Yeah, yeah.
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. I wanted to tap in to the good folks from Hip Hop Congress, the head of that organization, Jamal, has really put his shoulder to the grind and has moved this organization and hip hop in general into the political arena, making sure that there is a clear understanding of what the political landscape is like, how we engage it, and more importantly, how they as a individuals and as an organization fight. In San Mateo County, where they're based at, there's been some disturbing scenarios that have emerged. And the other day I saw a press release put out by Ramon and his organization that brought attention to a next level scenario around what we would call identity theft. And it's something that I think all of us should be very, very concerned, because it can happen to anybody, especially in the age of technology. And it can happen at a time when people have political agendas and will carry them out at all costs. So, Ramon, I wanted you to come on and talk a little bit about this. I know you all are going to be addressing this in a very public forum, but I figured let our audience understand what's happening and why we should be paying close attention. Why don't you give us a little bit of 101 of what's been happening in San Mateo County and how this connects to some of the concerns that people have on the precipice of fascism getting ready to come into the White House. Mm. We know that President-elect Donald Trump has said that he will pull out all the stops to make sure people who he deems enemies of the state are corralled and brought to justice. And when he says enemies of the state, he's talking about people who hold progressive values. He's talking about people like yourselves who are activists and organizers. He wants to give police carte blanche and get rid of, and make sure they always have qualified immunity. So if they do something crazy, they can't be held accountable. And I think us as Black folks have long suffered some of these scenarios, but to have them institutionalized and kind of formalized by the highest office of the land means that there will be a doubling down, and we're seeing that kind of play out with impunity. So what's been happening in San Mateo County?
Well, peace, Davey. Thanks for having me and our guests on today. It's wild, man. Like, some of the discussions that we've been having on our forums that we do weekly, the last one we had on Saturday was really kind of doubling down. And this is kind of across the board, not just in San Mateo County, but the need for citizens to get involved in their local governance because these fights, while we see them happening on the national scale, really trickle down, and the battlegrounds are really in the decision-making meetings of council members. And if we're not involved or we don't know what's going on in those rooms, then we have no say in that. And this fight came to me, not by me looking for it, but just by circumstance. So in addition to Hip Hop Congress, the Redwood City chapter of Hip Hop Congress is actually a martial arts dojo called Afro Bushido Academy. And this is something that I started about 2 years ago. And I took over the martial arts school that I've been training at for my whole life. And, I wanted to be able to have a space. It's named very particularly to bring our cultural experts from our indigenous cultures, from our African cultures, to be able to share their mastery of their knowledge. Because as we know, in Western culture, a lot of that information is not explored, is not even made accessible to our young people. And so to have a space where we can bring our experts in things like comedic wrestling, which is, I didn't even really know this, but, we all know Roman Greco wrestling is, it's like, oh, that's the oldest form of wrestling, but it comes from Kemet. It comes from Africa. And so, one of our guests, Los, is an expert in that. And I chose him to be my wrestling coach at this dojo. Well, it turns out that his son last year was arrested on with a warrant for a violent crime that he was never even at the site of. I'll let him speak to that experience because he's on the call with us. But Los came to me and said, "Yo, my son was arrested in San Mateo County. He wasn't even in the spot. Like, we think it was a stolen identity type of thing." In trying to, one, having to bail him out and all of these things, and then start to the legal process of finding out how can you prove factual innocence, all of this information about the justice system in San Mateo County started coming to light. And this is something I didn't even know, living here my whole life. But the long story short of it, pretty much for 60 years, San Mateo County has been the only county, the only non-rural county in the state that has not a public defender program, but a private defender program. And this office was created by judges and DAs, prosecutors. And it was instead of like, if you can't afford legal defense, you have to go through this private defender office that's made up of lawyers from the San Mateo County Bar Association. Now, it's been like this for 60 years. But what was discovered is that they're actually being sued right now because this private defender program, it doesn't have any oversight, is basically set up so that people like defense attorneys or people who are assigned to defense cases are just trying to, they get a flat rate. So they're just trying to get through them as many as possible so that they can, collect their paycheck. And what happens is people slip through the cracks, it's cases like Shawnee's is an example of that, right? Innocent person who the law, because of negligence or even kind of just trying to build a case against somebody for, personal reasons, it allows for that type of corruption to take place. And so as we go deeper and deeper into this process, we're discovering all of these things that the public does not know about. And there's now three lawsuits that are in process against San Mateo County, which includes, and one of them is actually the sheriff of San Mateo County is suing the county for a similar tactics of trying to remove her from office when they can't do that publicly. She was publicly elected. And because she doesn't go with the program, because she's actually building her career off of police accountability and transparency, and she made that choice when she started in law enforcement because she saw the level of corruption, and she told herself that if she ever made it to a position where she could do something about it, she would. So now she finally makes it up to that position, and the city council is pulling out all the stops to try to get her removed. So it's almost like a movie plot when you really look at all of the factors and what's going on, but this is reality. And and it's not unique to our county, but and we can expect this to happen kind of across the board, especially over the next 4 years, like you said, with the regime change and everything. So it really is requiring us to get way more involved and way more aware of the politics that are happening at the local level. And so that's what we're here to talk about today.
Appreciate that. And as you were talking, Ramon, I'm thinking about the history of San Mateo. I know when I first moved out here many moons ago, there was conversation, we're talking about the early 80s, about how difficult it was for Black and brown families to kind of get a home outside of East Palo Alto, because there were age-old covenants, unwritten rules, and just straight-up discrimination. The situation with the sheriff, and we can do a whole thing on that, is kind of in line with the pushback to having progressive folks get into these positions of power. So Pamela Price, the DA in Alameda County, gets removed. Chesa Boudin, the progressive DA in San Francisco, gets removed. There have been 100 progressive DAs elected around the country, and all of them have come under challenges where there were either attempts to remove them. Most have not succeeded in those attempts to remove them. So you saw people then change the laws to say that a DA cannot maybe do police accountability work, things of that nature. And so there's a reaction to this. And in this case, you actually have a sheriff. You know, this is maybe the second time we've seen a sheriff holding progressive values get into office and immediately folks around it and then try to remove them. In this case, the sister, she's first Latina to hold this position, I think, in the state.
I want to start off and bring Deshaun or Shawnee into the conversation and get him to explain what he's going through, what he's experienced. So Deshaun, welcome to the show, and break down what's been happening.
Pretty much, you know, something happened in 2020, February 2020. Basically, somebody, it started in San Francisco, and a guy and a girl, you know, they was together. They was in a hotel. They did some stuff. They recorded it, different things. That guy eventually take that, and this was a drunk girl, eventually take that girl to Half Moon Bay. And, you know, from there, they go to his parents' house, and she asks to call her guy named Poppy or whatever. And so Poppy come and meet them in Half Moon Bay, and he tell a guy that he want money for taking his girl away out here. And, you know, they end up going to a bank, getting the money. And the guy, you know, is telling the bank teller that, say, I don't have money, different things like that. So they basically, that guy, Poppy, they basically is saying it's me, you know, and that I kidnapped and robbed someone by taking them to a Wells Fargo, you know, 0.3 miles away, and different things like that. So that's what this case is pretty much around, an incident that happened at a Wells Fargo bank where somebody was trying to get money from someone else.
So, and, Shawnee, somebody listening to this would say, well, why don't they just look at the pictures and look at the recordings, and they should be able to say, this ain't Shawnee.
Yeah.
Why haven't they been able to do that, or have they done that and come up with something else?
Well, this system is so messed up that I feel I have to do all of that myself. So right now on my computer and on my stuff, I'm putting side-by-side videos of me and a guy and different things like that. One thing I noticed really small is that our hairlines is totally different. Mine kind of go down and his go around. It's just, it's different. And a lot of they only gave me a few photos of discovery. And a lot of the discovery I asked for, like the bank videos, if I get one clear bank video, that it'll just clearly show it's not me. But they also don't want to give up this information because it'll break their case. And they at least want me to take a deal or some sort to be pressured before they just say, oh, it wasn't you, you know? And so...
Do you have to use the lawyers from the private account that they have?
Yes, and I actually put in... I went to court. My last court day was January 6th. I actually put a complaint against him January 4th because for the last 6 months since he had me, we are still arguing about where I stand. He don't stand where I stand in terms of why I did this petition, and he's saying things like, I don't count for it, but I could clearly go to Penal Code 530.6, which say where a criminal complaint has been filed against the perpetrator in the victim's name. And so this is where I'm a victim of criminal identity theft. This is where I'm a petitioner and not the defendant. And so he can't get that. But also, it wouldn't be great for him, too, in terms of his job, because they get paid a flat fee and they kind of advise to spend as less time as on a case. And they have other things that they're trying to become. So they're going through this little process. So it's kind of like I'm a casualty at war in it. And so I put in, you know, different complaints and different things. And that's an investigation. And my next court date is March 12th. And I'm just getting as much word out on it.
I've been involved with cases before. Yeah. In this case, it sounds like what you're talking about is somebody, an office that won't go the extra yard, won't take the extra time, won't spend the extra money and resources, and here you are. And somebody might go, well, why not just hire a lawyer, which can be pretty expensive for a lot of folks. But, you know, are there folks within the department, are they kind of circling the wagon? Do they see like, hey, man, you know, y'all are going way too far, you know, drop the case? Or are they trying just to get you to take a plea deal and call it a day?
What's funny is ultimately they want me to take a plea deal. But what's funny is the last court date, the prosecutor like, hold on, like, you know, I'm at a petition. My next step is to have a hearing for the judge to determine if she feel like I've been a victim of criminal identity theft. So I'm pushing for that, and they trying to push forward to prelims. But the prosecutor last court date is saying, hold up, we need some time and we want to talk to the defense counsel. Now, this will make sense if you understand that I've been asking for all that discovery. Plus, if you understand that they went to Facebook, Google, Sprint, went to Google twice, Facebook, they went to all of these places to basically track my phone and show that I was in communication and that I've been to these places. And nothing showed up. Everything came back blank. And the last warrant from Google, the second Google search, came back during the George Floyd riots, the day after George Floyd died. And so at that point, the last stuff came back that showed that, okay, even if we thought this was him, nothing adds up. Because even the pictures we used on social media, the shoes don't match, the coat don't match, we said matched. And so now in May, this case is kind of dead. And so it's set for 4 months. And then Assistant District Attorney Sharon H. Lee processed it, or, you know, for another word. So the prosecutor saying that they need more time and to talk to defense counsel, you know, is really showing where their case is at, and that they never had a case and that they don't have one now. And now they know that they, you know, in trouble. At the same time, they still trying to pressure me and, you know, ultimately want me to take a deal, whether I'm innocent or not, you know.
Deshaun, let me ask you this. This has been going on for almost 5 years now.
Yes. And I just found out last year, 2024.
So they came to you and then you.
Yeah, so I had a warrant. They put a warrant out in September 2020. I didn't find, now again, this is, if you can go from zero probability, this makes sense too. I don't have a criminal record. I'm 30 years old. And they pulled me over for a traffic stop for expired tags while I'm going to the studio to go pack my luggage to go to a 7-day silent meditation retreat the next morning in New York. So they pulled me over and run my thing. And this is when they say I have a warrant in San Mateo County, a county that I don't frequent. They can't find a footprint of me in San Mateo County. And so from there, I knew it was something, but at every step,
that's,
I thought it was
going
to be
scary.
Over.
So you never knew you even had a warrant.
Never knew I had a warrant. And I'm about to go to New York. Could you imagine me at Rikers right now? I'd still be on the road, you know?
Ramon, this was the basis of what you were talking about in the press release that you all put out in the town hall that you're holding, that folks can get caught up in the system and not even realize that they've been caught up. And as Deshaun said earlier, how many other people have these things happen to? Maybe me, you, and somebody else in the age of fascism, where people are acting with impunity, any one of us could be walking down the street and somebody goes, you know, I think Ramon
think he might be here undocumented. Looks like one of those illegal guys, because you are light skinned, you know, and you have that hair, you know, and who knows, you could be stopped as he has and not realizing that you've been on the books for the past 3 or 4 years. That to me is the most frightening. And then all of a sudden you have to fight that, and you have a system that is kind of doubling and tripling down on this, which costs you money. Yeah. So hopefully, you know, are found innocent, everything's dismissed. But what happens if you laid out a bunch of money? What happens to your time? What happens to your reputation? You know, what happens to things that you wanted to do but can't do because you're now caught up in the system? And
that's all the harm, yeah.
And I think this goes back to what you were saying, Ramon. You were bringing this back to saying we have to be 10 toes down with local government. Otherwise, these things can happen on our watch and we not realize this.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, it comes down to even, you know, how it relates to me, where I was really trying to really just understand from a fundamental level. You know, we talk about self-defense. You know, we think about it in terms of physical, oftentimes like a physical attack. But what's more likely to happen, especially in the coming years, what's been happening to so many people, is this attack on your character, this attack on your freedom, your liberty, your rights. And how do we prepare ourselves to deal with those types of attacks? And, you know, I work with a lot of kids starting at 4 years old on up. And to prepare their generation for these types of circumstances is the best that I can do to try to, you know, get them to understand, like, this is the reality that you're going to grow up in. And any one of you, any one of us can go through this, can get caught up in this. So how do we prepare ourselves for a situation like that? You know, a lot of it comes back down to your ability to speak up for yourself or speak up for others. Because one thing I've noticed, especially with this generation, you know, post-COVID, there's a lot of self-esteem, confidence issues in young people where, and I deal with it directly, like they're afraid to use their voice. And it's almost as if we're getting conditioned to not resist. You know, we're getting conditioned to take the easiest path. You know, when conflict arises, just to go with it, just take the plea deal, you know, just, you know, it's going to cost too much. It's going to be, you know, all of these other things where people just, you know, they don't want to be locked up. So it's like, okay, well, you know, I'll take the least sentence. But that precedent is the scary part. And I tell you, if this can happen to a law enforcement official, it can happen to anybody. So Shani's going to be a guest presenting his story to our community here this Saturday in Redwood City. But also, you know, the sheriff has had a similar situation where, one, they knew they wanted her out of office because she didn't toe the party line or whatever. So they kind of created this situation where they launched a private independent investigation, basically anonymously interviewing all of her, you know, detractors, like the employees that didn't like her because she was cleaning house. So they did anonymous interviews, a retired judge, somebody hired a retired judge to do these anonymous interviews, gather all this evidence, but none of these interviews were conducted under oath, and they're not, their names aren't open to the public. So she can't even double back and say, well, who is this? There's like a writ of privacy or whatever. Like, she can't access and see who's saying these things. And they're trying to pull out every little kind of detail of, like, that could be policy violation. And they just recently found that of all of the transcripts of the interviews, there's 29 pages of content that actually speaks to her favor that were deducted from the written report that went to the city council, that the city council used to try to justify removing her from office, which they can't do. So what they did instead is they created a measure. It's called Measure A, and this is what people are going to be voting on in as soon as February, that allows city council to fire the sheriff. So they're trying to get the voters to either, you know, not know enough about it or just believe what the
what the media is saying and going along with this report. I mean, it's like ridiculous. They're trying to say that she's homophobic and racist. It's ridiculous. I mean, this is, you can tell when you look at the report, if anybody were to find the report and read it, you can just see how one-sided it is and how weak it is. But they're trying to pass these measures off to have the legal right to do these things. And so we just have to know the tactics. We have to become aware of the tactics that that people in these positions of power are utilizing, and be able to use the law to show why it's unlawful for our elected officials and even law enforcement to utilize these things. But if we're not aware or we're not vigilant about that, this is just going to keep happening again and again, because it's a money thing, you know.
Right. Let me. You mentioned that you all are having a town hall. Can you give the information on that?
Absolutely. So this Saturday, January 18th at 5:30 p.m., we're going to start off with, it's at a Afro Bushido Academy in Redwood City. The address is 2699 Spring Street. Zip code is 94063. We'll be doing a board-breaking exhibition for the students there, and then followed up by an open mic night. And Deshaun is our special guest, as well as the sheriff will be there. And it's also open to artists that want to perform too. Every month we try to do a community event that brings everybody together and allows us to share our talents and share our stories. And so this is going to be a big one. We've had amazing events in the past. And so if you're in the area or you want to check it out, or and you want to ask, you know, even questions from the sheriff directly, and Deshaun about these situations and what their strategies are, the point is to share this knowledge so that we can prepare ourselves. And ultimately what I think it comes down to is that if we can't win in the courts because the courts are already compromised, then we have to win in the court of public opinion. And a lot of times that is our last resort, is we know when enough people become aware of it, then they start to change their story, right? When they're exposed to enough people. But as long as they can do this stuff behind closed doors, they're going to keep doing it because they can get away with it. And so it's really on us to spread the awareness and to support each other when these things happen.
Appreciate that. Again, what's the address?
2699 Spring Street in Redwood City.
Okay.
And 5:30 Saturday.
And appreciate that. Deshaun, any last comments from you? Any marching orders, anything that you would like the public to do in your case?
You know, just look out for it, support it whichever way you can support. But I also, you know, it just really brings me to the millions of people that was affected, blacks that was affected over the years of this same type of thing. And I'm able to see it coming from zero probability of doing this crime and being treated like I did it 100%. It's like I see the whole, you just see the whole system.
Deshaun and Ramon, we appreciate you taking time. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
Listeners, sponsored stations count on you, not Arbitron. So when you push their buttons, you get radio that turns you on.
Hi there, this is Ann Feeney, and you are listening to listener-supported community radio, KBOO FM in Portland.
Prison Pipeline is a radio program dedicated to educating the public about the Oregon criminal justice system. Topics include incarceration and reentry, addictions and mental health, elections and laws, victims' rights, and criminal justice reform. The program presents a unique understanding of the criminal justice system, addresses the root causes of crime, and challenges the status quo. It seeks to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safer, healthier, and more just society.
Prison Pipeline airs on Monday evenings from 6:30 to 7 p.m. on KBOO Portland. Check us out every week. If you miss an episode, you can stream it later. Just go to kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. More info about upcoming shows and events related to the prison community can be found on our Facebook page, Prison Pipeline. Be sure to like us.
Thank you. This is David Barsamian of Alternative Radio, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.